My great-great-grandmother, Virginia Sanderson Adams, passed away a few weeks ago at the age of 111. Her advanced age placed her in the human longevity category of supercentenarian, and one of only a few hundred people in the entire world living beyond the age of 110. Grandma Virginia didn't consider her situation to be anything special. In fact, to some degree, she felt her age was a curse. At the mention of the blessing of her extraordinary longevity, she always replied with, "The longer you live, the more loved ones you must grieve for." I've always found supercentenarians fascinating and wish I'd gotten to know my great-great-grandmother a bit more. She lived on the other side of the country, so I had only met her once, when I was 19 years old and she was 91. I recall embarrassingly little about that visit, because at 19, I was too wrapped up in my own life to think about the significance of hers. Today, at 39, when one is much more aware of their own mortality, what I wouldn't give for the opportunity to peek through the time capsule in her head. I imagine the stories and memories that could be stored through and blocked out of there that very likely could provide personal accounts of some of the most significant moments of history long before pocket cameras and 24-hour news. My newfound interest in my great-great-grandmother's life compelled me to volunteer my assistance with the careful process of logging, removing, and redistributing the contents of the house she inhabited for 18 years. I traveled from Pittsburgh to Elko, Nevada, where she had lived with her husband, who was killed in an accident in a gold mine in the winter of 1944. As I and other family members sorted through what was essentially a tangible history of her exceptionally long life, I quite literally stumbled upon a trunk containing, among other things, a stack of correspondence that created a story that I'm still not quite sure. Although the letters are complete two-way correspondence, the events described are not primarily about Grandma Virginia. For all intents and purposes, this story is about her twin sister, Dorothy Sanderson Millens, and the extended nightmare that had befallen her in 1934, Oklahoma, living in the Dust Bowl during the height of America's Great Depression. January 14th, 1934. Dear sister, I hope this letter finds you in happiness and good health. I felt it would be a good time to check on you and Jim and see how things are in Oklahoma. I have heard there has been a drought there for quite some time. How are your crops? Is still growing well, I hope. And how is your little one, Jacob? He must be 6 or 7 years old now, if I recall correctly. Things are going well here in Elko. Jonathan is working for a gold mine, and they have been extracting tremendous amounts for the past year. It is certainly a wonderful time to be in the business of precious metals, and I pray the good fortune will continue. Well, I must be going. Jonathan will be home soon, so I should get supper started. All my love, Virginia. February 7th, 1934. Sweet Virginia, it is so good to hear your voice, even if it's only on the paper before me. I do have my health and happiness, but things here in Oklahoma are not going well at the moment. The drought hit our area hard, and the crops were gone by midsummer last year. Water is getting harder and harder to pump from the well, and grain for the livestock has almost run out. Our savings account is empty as of a week ago, and the mortgage on the farm has come due. Jim went to California nearly a month ago to find work, and we haven't heard from him since. I figure he's been working hard to get his feet under him, and I should receive a letter and a few dollars any day now. Jacob is well, you're right. He's 7 years old and full of energy. I believe he'll grow up to be a big, strong boy, like his daddy, and be a real help on the farm. Food is getting scarce now, but I make sure he's eating well by giving him some of my proteins too. I can get by just fine with a little less in my belly. Love, Dorothy. March 1st, 1934. Dearest sister, I am checking in with you to see if things are improving. I have included a small sum of money to help with your needs. I know you are not someone who desires charity, but the gold mine is still producing a great deal, and we've managed to retain a bit of Jonathan's pay every week. I trust Jim has sent a letter by this time and some money to help you get by while he works out west. All my love, Virginia. April 26th, 1934. Sweet Virginia, I am sorry for the delay in responding to your letter, but I do have wonderful news. A few days after my last letter to you, Jim returned home. It was great to see him, but I fear that meant he was unable to find work. Although he didn't find a steady job, he came back with something better than money. While on the road in Texas with a few others, Jim came across a farm that was growing so well, he wouldn't have believed it had it not been right in front of him. The soil in that part of Texas is as bad as here in Oklahoma, but all sorts of vegetables were growing to huge sizes, and the picker's baskets were overflowing. The man would only allow Jim and the others to work for a couple weeks, but he sent each man home with a nice bit of money and some special seeds. Jim and the others learned the correct way to plant and cultivate those seeds, and the man told Jim if he follows those instructions here at home, the vegetables will grow taller than the barn. The money you sent helped us get through a tough spot. You have my sincerest gratitude, and when I see you again, I'll return your generosity. As for the farm, it is still early, but Jim planted those seeds, and the crops are already sprouting faster than I've ever seen. We're very hopeful for a good season now. Love, Dorothy. May 19th, 1934. Dear sister, it brings such joy to my heart to hear of your good fortune. How are things now? Jonathan and I are very anxious to hear the results of the special seeds and the big harvest that surely is headed your way. I have no doubt that Jim's hard work will pay off, and the crops will provide what you need. Things here in Elko are moving along splendidly. The mine is producing more gold than ever, and Jonathan has become quite popular with the man in charge of the company. They have promoted him to head foreman. It seems both of us are receiving the Lord's blessing. All my love, Virginia. June 11th, 1934. Sweet Virginia, I am so glad to hear of Jonathan's success at the mine. Jobs are so difficult to get these days, so the two of you are blessed beyond measure. The farm is alive and well with nature's bounty. The crops have exploded beyond belief, and we are already selling bushels and bushels at the market. Things are going so well that Jim has been able to hire a few friends and neighbors to help out. He needs the help pretty bad. That poor man has been so very tired recently. His walk has slowed some, and he carries himself like an old man at times. I told him once, we get the crops under control, he needs to take some time off. He agreed and left it at that. He does still have his appetite though, and even seems to be eating nearly 2 or 3 times his normal portions. I suppose even at 27, he's still a growing boy. We shared some seeds from the new crops, but they just don't seem to sprout at any of neighboring farms. Some of the fellas asked him for the location of the man with the farm in Texas, so they can go get the special seeds for themselves, but Jim wouldn't tell them. He said we would share as much of our crops as they needed, and it would be best not to go to Texas. The man didn't agree, and were pretty angry when they left. I asked him about it when he came into the house and got short with me, and said not to speak of it again. My sweet husband has never been spoken to me like that. But I'll respect his wishes about it. As I said before though, he seems so tired and worn down, and he's got a cut on his forearm that won't seem to heal. I dress it as best as I can, but the next day it looks like a fresh wound again. A few days ago, I went to the barn to fetch my dear Jim, and found him bent over in the back corner, holding his arm with blood dripping to the ground. I interrupted him and asked what he was doing back there. He said he had bumped that cut into a bale of hay and opened it back up. He's asked me not to come into the barn anymore because the roof needs some repairs and it's not safe right now. It looks fine to me, but I'm sure he's right. I do hope Jim can heal up and regain some energy soon. Jacob's 8th birthday is in a few days, and I have a special cake planned. Well, I must be going. I need to get Jacob his bath ready. Love, Dorothy. July 9th, 1934. Dearest sister, Jonathan and I are happy beyond words to hear of the success at your farm. The Lord's blessing are shining brightly in Oklahoma. I hope that Jim has managed to get a few days off since you last wrote me, and I hope the cut on his arm has healed properly. It is a dangerous thing to have a wound exposed for so long. Jonathan and I have discussed coming for a visit. Work at the mine has slowed a bit, and after all his hard work, Jonathan is due for a bit of time away. Please let me know when would be a good time for a visit, and we will make our travel arrangements. I am very much looking forward to wrapping my arms around my beautiful sister for the first time in ages. Please offer Jacob my belated birthday wishes. All my love, Virginia. August 28, 1934. Dearest sister, I have yet to receive a response to my last letter, and Jonathan and I are concerned for the well-being of your family. We know you are most likely overwhelmed with the success of the farm, but please send a little note soon to put our worried minds at ease. Also, please let me know when we can travel to visit you. All my love, Virginia. September 21st, 1934. Sweet Virginia, I apologize for not responding sooner, but things here at the farm have taken a dreadful turn. My sweet husband has gone to be with the Lord in heaven. Even this late in the year, the crops have showed no sign of slowing. We have many men helping with the harvest, but still the vegetables grow and spread. If our helpers weren't working nearly around the clock, the crops would have likely swallowed our home entirely. Just 10 days ago, I came into the kitchen to find a string of half-runner beans had grown in from outside. I followed it through the kitchen and into the bedroom where it had run across the floor, climbed the bedpost and was within just inches of Jim's arm. My dear husband's health had continued to deteriorate to the point that he could hardly get out of bed in the morning, so I finally put my foot down and insisted he see a doctor. He again refused, but did agree to take a few days off I suggested he allow Jacob a bit more responsibility. I saw a flash of what looked like fear in his eyes, and he said no. But I stood firm on it, and he finally agreed, as long as it was only for a couple days. After supper, he took Jacob out to the barn to show him what needed to be done in his absence. Jim never got out of bed again though, and passed away 2 days later. Jacob has been such a blessing after the death of his daddy. He has continued to work the farm, faithfully tending to his duties in the barn, then helping the man with these seemingly endless crops. The poor boy has been working so hard, and I see the exhaustion in him now. He is even walking with a bit of a limp, although he wouldn't let me take a look at it. I am feeding him as much as I can to keep his strength up, but it never seems to be enough. Still, he is up with the sun every morning and doesn't return until supper time. I must go now. I need to deliver Jim's best suit of clothes to the funeral home for the services tomorrow. Please say a prayer for us as we begin our lives without him. Love, Dorothy. October 9th, 1934. Dearest sister, God rest Jim's poor soul, only 27 years old. My heart is breaking for you at this time, and Jonathan is beside himself with grief. You and Jacob are in our prayers, night and day. Output from the mine has reached full capacity again, so we will be unable to get away to see you as soon as we would like. But Jonathan expects to have some time off by Thanksgiving. Please, please write me as soon as possible, so we may make our arrangements for a holiday visit. Our deepest sympathies, Virginia. December 1st, 1934. Dearest sister, it has been over 2 months since I have heard from you. Jonathan and I had hoped to be able to spend Thanksgiving with you and cheer you and Jacob up a bit after the tragic loss of your husband. But those days have come and gone without a word from you. We are very concerned for your well-being. Please, please respond as soon as you receive this letter. All my love, Virginia. March 13th, 1935. Hello, Mrs. Adams. My name is Mary Alice Webster. I am the new owner of your sister's Dorothy's farm, just outside Boise City, Oklahoma. I have begun this letter several times, then changed my mind because I couldn't bear the thought of sending you this kind of news. Around the middle of November last year, your sister went to fetch her son Jacob for supper and found him dead from exhaustion. As I understand it, his father Jim died the same way. Workers nearby said they heard a scream from the barn, and when she emerged carrying her dead son, she was screaming. It was the blood over and over, although to this day, no one knows what she meant by it. Poor Dorothy entered the house, laid her son on the bed, then moved to the sitting room where she discharged a shotgun in her mouth. I am so sorry for your tremendous loss. Along with this letter, I have included a few photographs and keepsakes that were saved from the bank auction. Including with them is a stack of letters Dorothy had been receiving from you. Please know that I did not read them. My husband's daughter and I have just moved to Oklahoma from Nebraska, hoping to make a new start after the loss of our own infant child. We have been very encouraged by the stories of endless bounty that befell this property last year, and were delighted with the price we secured at the auction for such a desired place of land. Otter has been quite optimistic about this growing season. and was over the moon when he found a small envelope filled with seeds tucked beneath a peculiar looking root in the back of the barn. We are certainly grateful to Mr. Jim for that. He had even left instructions for the best way to plant and tend to them. What order once shared the details with me. He says it must be kept a secret. Men can be so silly sometimes. Again, Mrs. Adams, I am so very sorry for your loss. May the Lord bless you and keep you always. Sincerely, Mary Alice Webster, 1935.